This is the Last Minute Blues Podcast with Donnie Fandango, Jeff Burton, Alex Ferrario, and former Blues defenseman Jamie Rivers.
It is the Last Minute Blues Podcast. Donnie Fandango joined in studio by Jeremy Rutherford from The Athletic and my dude Alex Ferrario from 101 ESPN. A couple of things here to start the showgram here. First of all, a very happy belated birthday to our dude, Jeremy Rutherford.
Yeah, man. Gentlemen.
And he got himself a new George Foreman grill, which was nice to see. Yeah. Very, very nice to see.
Did you put it next to your bed like Michael Scott's and put some bacon on in the morning when you wake up?
That sounds like a good idea.
Just don't step on it, though, because we don't need you putting bubble wrap around your foot.
You know you're getting old when you get excited about something like that.
Hey, let me tell you something. My wife and I bought a flower bed for our backyard because we're going to start trying to grow like veggies and stuff.
Yeah,
I can't tell you how excited I was when we bought that to be like, oh my God, we're going to start building some, growing some peppers, some tomatoes.
Dude, guys, every time that I do yard work, all right, every time when it's done and I'm kind of like sweeping up in the driveway, and boy, if I had if I had those suspenders, I'd have my thumbs out. Just be like, this is great. Look how beautiful the grass looks. I'm a 100-year-old man. That's just what it is, man.
You just want to sit down and tilt your cap down.
That's right. Yeah. Sit in the chair and just like enjoy the silence. Yeah, man, we're old.
That
That's what it
is. That's a picture of what JR did on his birthday. He just did his grass, sat in his chair with his George Foreman, and
No way. He's got two young athletes. He was probably at 12 games that day is what my bet is.
I'll tell you, I don't know if this is getting old or this is just a busy schedule, but I pulled into a gas station here a couple days ago, pulled into the spot, I'm right next to the pump, and just kind of put my head back. But 15 minutes later, I'm like, I guess I better get out and pump the gas.
Oh, JR, man. We got to get you some rest, buddy.
I thought you were going to fall asleep.
We got to get you some rest.
People honking at JR.
And also, too, I want to give a gigantic shout, and it's still so amazing to me, and this is... The Battlehawks play at home on Saturday night and draw 40,000 people. That is absolutely, it's madness.
What was it, 100,000 people in downtown St. Louis on Saturday between the Cardinals, Battlehawks, and MLS game? Like 100,000 people.
I love it so much.
And add on top of it, and I know it's not St. Louis, but add on top of it, who was out at the Puck Cancer event at Centene, that was sold out as well.
I think that sometimes, because we live here, and are in it, we forget this place kind of rules. Like I mean, we're passionate fans, we're great fans. Listen, man, I'm gonna say this, and please don't be mad at me. You will be, but that's okay. That Battlehawk football's not great. It's not. Okay, but it's fun. And it's your way to continue to tell Stan Kroenke to shove it right up his pie hole. And I just kind of like that you're holding that grudge.
Oh, yeah.
And plus two, man, like, it's amazing to see all those other teams with barely anybody there, and then you go to St. Louis and like, well, we represent. We do well here. But then it also brings up the there's no reason that we shouldn't have an NFL team thing, but then, well, I guess, well, we can approach that another time.
Donnie, I went to about 3 Battlehawks games, I think, last year, maybe in the last 2 years combined, and it was great. And I always joke around about this. I always say that, you know, when there's 42,000 people at the Battlehawks games, that means that Jefferson County is empty. You could rob a bank because...
Hey, honestly, he's as a fellow Jefferson County, he is not wrong.
Yeah, and for all my people listening out there, Jefferson County, I'm... live in Jefferson County.
I am one of you.
I'm from Jefferson County.
I am you.
I'm laughing with you, not at you. But it is a blast. And here's the best part. Like, I was a Cub reporter on the Rams scene. And, you know, with the fans, they could tell you who the backup left guard was for the Rams during, you know, their run. With the Battlehawks, I don't know that the fans can name too many players. No. I sat in the crowd and they were like, so who's the quarterback? It's A.J. McCarron.
Who's this A.J. McCarron cat?
Then McCarron didn't play that game because he was injured. And so they knew, I mean, people around me knew nobody on the field, but they were just there for the beer and the football.
You're there for football.
Man, you get people dressing up. I mean, you got it's just people going out and having a great goddamn time on a Saturday night in St. Louis, and I love it. And also, too, I just love it for our city because I understand every city has lots of issues. I get it. But I feel like over the course of the last couple, St. Louis City, for some reasons, very obvious, the PR ain't great. And so when you have a nice weekend like that where you have all of that going on downtown and there aren't any sort of nefarious stories or at least any big ones, we take those, we appreciate that, and hope that there are many more to come because our city could really, really unbelievably use that.
Oh, God, yeah.
But congratulations, Battlehawk fans. You're on another friggin' level.
Caw-caw.
Like, I mean, that is another level. I almost feel like, and this is something pretty big for me to say, that, like, you're sort of approaching, like, sort of Bills Mafia level, like, passion when you're... It's a UFL game, for the love of friggin' Pete. Like, I don't know, man. There's just something extra about it,
well,
I think.
All we need is Donnie to go show them how to jump through a card table in the parking lot on their tailgates, and then we're right there.
I'm going
to
do that first for a Bills game, because then that way if I get hurt, it will be for that for the and Bills. Not for the Battle
That's smart.
Because if I break something for the – I mean, that just wouldn't – I just wouldn't feel like it was worth it.
I think you – I don't think you're breaking anything. I think you're breaking the table, and that's it. I think you're in great shape to just physically jump through that table.
I do believe, though, that I am. I got this gift certificate a couple years ago for some airline miles, right? Used some of the airline miles for Mary and I to go to Detroit last year to see Depeche Mode. Well worth it. I've been holding on to this little last little batch of monies. And I think that I am going to go and see a Bills game this year in Buffalo.
Nice.
Now, I will say this, though. If breaking Buffalo Bills news happens again during this podcast today,
actually,
I might have to quit the podcast. But outside of that... It's great to see you guys. Welcome to the show.
I got a ton of people that said that they loved that podcast, but they loved the last, like, 10 seconds of the podcast.
I blew it up.
Donnie just took it over.
Hey, and Donnie, you guys touched on the Chaser event. That was just great. Phenomenal. Yeah. I was out there, and I want to tell you that I wrote that story. I know you don't read my stories, but
I wrote the story. I read it.
Yeah.
Damn it.
With Chaser, and kind of Ghost wrote the story for him. And the funny part was, we talked a month ago, right? And then the story didn't run until a couple days before the event. Chaser, that's how it works, right? You put the story out the day or two before the event starts. Well, I get a text from him about 3 days before, and he says something about, hey, where's the story? And I said, hey, we're going to run it tomorrow. He goes, well, good thing we didn't want to sell any tickets to this thing. And I text him back, and I said, Chaser, in 20 years of knowing you, the one thing I have learned is that you do not need any help selling anything. And for the first time that I can remember, he actually complimented me. He said, good point. You got a good point there. I can sell anything here.
That's so awesome. I saw a picture with your kiddo and Garth friggin' Brooks.
Yeah,
that's
incredible. That was pretty sick. It was, first of all, it was an unbelievable event that Chaser put on. I mean, to have the NHL alumni out there, the Blues alumni, 3,000, like Alex said, you know, big crowd, 3,000 people. I mean, to look out there, I mean, I grew up in St. Louis and watched the Blues in the 80s, 90s, and to see Brendan Shanahan skating out there.
It was so cool.
With some of these guys, Nelson Emerson, Jeff Brown, and so on and so
Pierre
forth.
Turgeon.
It like just takes you back, right? And so I know the rink manager per se at the Centene, and he said, hey, why don't you stand over here by the Zamboni entrance for the game? Just a perfect place to sit and watch this thing. And all of a sudden, they're in between periods, and the people are coming off the ice, and here comes Garth Brooks. And my son, he puts his back up against the wall, minds his own business, and Garth is coming down the hallway. Garth goes out of his way, puts his hand on his shoulder, and says, what's your name, little fellow? And, and you know, he's, hey, Eli. And so anyway, I told Garth, now listen, you'd be the perfect person to ask this real quick. I know that these entertainers have been in this position a chameleon times, and it gets old, right? It gets old. And whether they respond positively or negatively gets reported by everybody, so on and so forth. But I figured, you know, he's right there. I got my 10 seconds, and I just said, hey, we saw you last year in Vegas, my wife and I's 20th wedding anniversary. And he said, did she like it? And I said, yep. And I said, she loved it. And he said, good deal. So, you know, 10 seconds, you know, I know he's done that a million times, but it's a 10 seconds that I'll always remember.
Didn't even ask you if you liked this concert, huh?
Just your wife. He didn't care.
Just your wife.
But here's the thing, why I love all that. That's Garth Brooks.
Mm-hmm.
Garth Brooks doesn't have to do any of that.
Nothing.
Garth Brooks can walk a straight line from where they want him to be to where he wants to be, and that's it. He doesn't have to interact with anybody. So I just continue to feel and get the vibe that Garth Brooks is a real one.
Yep.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, he just seems like a friggin' phenomenal guy. And even Trisha Yearwood, even his significant
Trisha
other,
Yearwood.
She seems friggin' great, too.
Yeah.
And I don't even particularly know any of her songs. I think I probably know her more for her cooking and stuff, more than that. But I just think that's so amazing, man. And your kid, one day, he might not appreciate that, like, right now.
Oh, I know.
But someday he's going to be like, Holy crap.
The pictures that Eli is going to have, like when he turns 18, to just look back and
you're
be like.
You're just saying that because he has one with
well,
you.
Well, he does have one with me. I got to feel like when he's 18, he's going to look at that and be like, who the hell is this guy? Jared's like, oh, that's to Alex. I don't want this.
But how am I going to have him next to Garth Brooks?
Yeah, come on. Out of here. Like a Frank Cusimano, though.
He does know the name Garth Brooks because, you know, he knows that his mom and dad went to the concert last year in Vegas. And also, you know, just everybody knows the name of Garth Brooks, right? But on the way home from that event, he's a big YouTuber, so he starts YouTubing like Garth Brooks concerts, and he sees these stadiums where there's 80, 90, 100,000 people at him. Whoa, Dad, that guy?
Yeah.
Like, oh, my God.
That's awesome.
But then we get home, and my daughter, who's 13, 14, I can't remember, she was more upset that she didn't meet Dave Coulier, Uncle Joey.
Understandable.
From Full House.
Understandable.
I do believe, though, she will have the opportunity to see Dave Coulier play a charity hockey game in St. Louis again.
I would I go think out that's on a
kind
limb.
Of,
yeah.
I think that dude is kind of on that circuit right now.
I wanted to go so bad, but my wife worked, and because I had a Blues game the day before and the day after, and so I was on dad duty, and I was like, you know what? It's like, I'll just take him. Like, I'll just go. But then I'm like, on second thought, that's a 3-year-old and a 1-year-old going to a hockey game when bedtime is right now. I know they will be screaming bloody murder. They won't get a kick out of it like I would. So I was doing dad duty and I was watching it, which props to them for putting it on YouTube. But I was able to stream it, like JR said. I was able to like watch Brendan Shanahan and Pierre Turgeon played. So I still got about like 3, 4, 5 years before I can start bringing girls to those events.
I want to come to an event where you have both kids, a 3-year-old and a 1-year-old, and people like see you, maybe recognize you or something, and say, Alex, what's up with the penalty kick? You got two kids just going nuts, and you got to explain.
Two kids, I'm going to be having a third one on my back and be like, one. I don't have time for that.
I can just imagine you pulling into the Centene in a parking spot with the kiddos in the back seat going, this is really a bad idea. This is really a bad idea.
It's funny you say that, Donnie, because every time I pull into the grocery store, a store that I have to go into, a gas station sometimes, I pull in and I look in the back seat and I go, this is a bad idea. But then I'm like, the hell with it. Let's have some fun. And we go into the grocery store. My daughter grabs a jar of Prego and just drops it on the ground. And we're like, just another day in paradise. Can't wait for the third
Prego,
one.
Prego, that's why you're in that situation.
That's very true. There will be no more Prego after August.
I guess it was about 2, maybe 3 years ago. I'm here at work during the summer, and I get a frantic call from Dexter's school, my youngest. Mr. Mueller, we're going to need you to come and get Dexter. He was curious and pulled the fire alarm. And so we have the fire department here now, and we think that would be a good idea for you to come and get Dexter. And that drive, I just remember thinking, man, kids, I wanted him so bad. So bad. And we're going to do that. We're going to do this. Thankfully, he hasn't pulled the fire alarm since.
I'm still confused at who's Mr. Mueller.
Oh, yeah. I always forget that. There are people that really believe that Fandango is my last name.
My dad does.
Oh, well.
My dad's like, it's like, how do you like doing the podcast with Donnie Fandango? I said, it's actually not his name, Dad. And he goes, what the hell are you talking about? He goes, his name is Donnie Fandango. I said, no, it's not, man. I promise you, it's not. So I think I actually for any kids listening, Santa Claus is real. But you know how you break that moment for them? I kind of think I did that to my dad.
I told a listener that once, like at a gig. Like, I don't even remember how we were talking, blah, 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 blah. Something about my last name. And then I told him, you know, that's not my real last name. And I swear to God, this man looked upset.
Yeah.
Like, for real. Like,
you
I
ruined that guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, because he had a tattoo and now he was with your name on it.
On his back that says Fandango.
Guys, like,
shirt.
How can you be surprised when someone's last name is not Fandango? I don't know anyone besides in a Queen song.
For the longest time when I listened to you, I just assumed you were a part of the family that started the Fandango movie app on my phone. And I could probably get movies with Donnie.
Dudes, I had Fandango years before they started using that. I should have whatever. I should have trademarked that son of a gun.
So for people don't know, like, how did it come about?
It was pretty awesome because I was a very new intern at the station, and I had started to run the board, meaning that These guys, Joe and John, were out, and they did a dance party at this club on the landing. And so I would run the board, you know, make sure that the music was there, and then run the commercials when they had to go to commercials. Make sure nobody cussed, that sort of thing.
JR was dancing.
And so our afternoon host at the time was a guy named Eric Schmidt. I don't know if you guys know Eric, but he did Afternoon Drive for us for a while, was our APD. I learned a lot from Eric. Well, that particular night, Eric and his roommate drunk dialed me on both the studio lines because they knew that I was there and they were at home and they were drunk and they were looking to mess with me because I was the intern and that's just what you did.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we're having this conversation. I'm talking to these two drunk idiots while I'm running the board. And somehow, and I don't know the sentence, but I use the word fandangled.
That's a really good word.
In a sentence as we're talking, and Eric's roommate said, "That's it. That's it. Fandango. You are Fandango." And I was like, oh my God, that is awful. I hate it. But I thought that they were drunk, so I wasn't really particularly concerned about it. I came in the next day for Eric's show in the afternoon, and every time that he put me on the mic, Donnie Fandango, Donnie Fandango, and he...
He started it.
He started it. But a couple days even after this, I'm out and about doing something, and I was with Trish Gazelle, who used to do the Point Morning Show.
Love Trish.
And somebody said, "Hey, that's Fandango." And that was the first time anybody had ever mentioned me anything, and I was like, I think that name helps.
Yeah.
I think I'm going to go ahead and roll with that.
Sticking with it.
And then just went with intern Fandango, intern Donnie, and then it just, it absolutely stuck. But yeah, man, there are people that are disappointed to know that that is not my real last name. And my mother-in-law sends the birthday cards, the Christmas cards, all the cards to the kids, to the house.
To the Fandangos.
To Ava Fandango, to Dexter Fandango. Which, you know, whatever. I don't prefer that, but, you know, it is what it is. It's going to be weird, though, when it's just back to Mueller all the time. You know what I'm saying? And that'll happen at some point or the other.
That will be very hard to go back to that. That's going to be nearly impossible for you because when you hear it, it's going to be like, whoa.
But also when I hear it, I feel like there's some kind of work thing going on. So I feel like I got to go.
Oh, that makes you in work mode?
Beyond. Yeah. So maybe it won't be that.
Donnie, quick one. When I was writing for the UMSL newspaper, I was going to stages a lot, and I guess maybe you worked with him at some point, Rick Idle, along the way? Maybe?
Yes. But I'm not particularly sure how much you want my opinion on that particular situation.
Yeah, the only reason I bring it up is because that's when I learned about name changes.
Yeah.
And so I didn't know about that. But here's the point of the story, is that I loved going to stages, and it was the happening thing when I was in my 20s, right?
Yeah.
And so I think he went to UMSL, so I decided I'm going to write a story about him for the UMSL newspaper. So he gave me like a day or two to come chat with him and write this story for the UMSL newspaper. So the story runs. I'm all excited about it. You know, people like, you know, see the story. That's the DJ that they listen to, so on and so forth. So a couple days later, I go to stages like at 11:30 at night, can't get there too early, right? And I walk in, and the beat's pumping, and Rick's on the microphone, and we've listened to him the whole way over, two stages on the radio, and I walk in with my buddy, and I'm like, that's the guy I wrote the story about. And like, I thought I was something. And he goes, "What's up?" And he's on the air, and he goes, and he looks at me after he dealt with me for like 48 hours, and he goes, "Jim's in the house."
Oh, no.
And he points to me, and my buddy looks at me. I think still to this day, 30 years later, my buddy calls me Jim because Rick Idle called me Jim.
You know, one of the things that I find to be amusing sometimes, and we'll talk about blues here in just a second. I'm just bringing this up randomly. But is when two guys are in a room, and there's also a beautiful lady in the room.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the guys decides that he wants to try to shoot down the other guy to make himself look a little bit better in front of the girl.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Not a big fan of that sort of action.
No? You feel like you got some PTSD with that somewhat, Donnie?
It's not really PTSD. It's just as much as like, okay, dude, you don't need to be a big roller in front of me. Like, I don't even care. Like, the girl's yours, man. Like, like, whatever. You don't need to freaking make fun of me, you yutz.
Hey, man. Females make us a different type of person.
That's
true.
That's true.
They make us different.
That's true. That's true. So, what do we think here? Well, four games left in this Blues season. And, ups and downs. I don't even really know what to say. I really don't know. You know, I think it's good they're not making the playoffs. This is not a playoff team. It wouldn't feel that way. I feel like all of these guys should be paying money to Jordan Bennington and Joel Hofer every friggin' day.
Or at least buying them steak dinners every night.
I mean, as much as they want. You know what I mean? I think that... As far as this team goes, I don't know the best way to say this, so I'm just going to say it. I've seen enough. You know what I mean? Like,
when did you get to that point, Donnie? That Sharks loss? That Sharks loss kind of hit it for you? The last one, JR.
You know what? It's been maybe just over a week or so where it just been kind of like, all right, we... Maybe it was the last time that we were close to a playoff
that we felt spot, like we were in it,
and we fell out. So,
but that probably would have been that Vegas game then, right?
It's just like, guys, we know what this is. Yeah. We know what's going to happen. We kind of know. I'm ready for the next chapter.
Yeah. I mean, I think for me, that moment hit when the Sharks game happened, and it felt like it happened pregame because. The way that Bannister formulated those lines, you could tell, like, yeah, they're turning the page. Like, with Bolduc up top, with Dean back in, the healthy scratched Hayes and Krug, you're thinking, okay, they know that it's going to be impossible to get into the playoffs, so they're turning the page. And then when you laid the egg against the Sharks, you're thinking, okay. That was the moment where I think it finally hit me where it's like, there's going to have to be some changes for the Blues. Because, I mean, we talked about this on postgame. If you look at what the Blues have done against the bottom four teams in the National Hockey League, it is night and day compared to the Kings, the Predators, and the Golden Knights. If I'm not mistaken, the Blues had like 11 of a possible 24 points against the Sharks, the Ducks, the Columbus Blue Jackets, and the Chicago Blackhawks. Jeez. The Kings had 19 of 20. The Vegas Golden Knights had 16 of 22. And the Nashville Predators had like 18 of 24. So, and those are just rough numbers. I have them in my book.
Right.
But basically what it is they were like six games above 500 against those four teams, where the Blues were 5-5-1 against those teams. That's your season right there. When you look back on the season and you sit there and you say, man, it's like I thought we were better than this. You didn't beat the Sharks. You didn't beat the Blue Jackets. You couldn't beat the Blackhawks every single time. You beat the Ducks every single time. But those other three teams, right there is 22, 24 points that are sitting in front of you that you could be talking about playoffs.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
I think it's just more of them, of it being in writing, they are what they are.
Yeah.
You know?
A mid-team that was supposed to be in the playoff race that fought for third and then fell out of it.
For sure, for sure. So had they beaten those teams, they would be in the playoff, you know, standings.
Yeah, you'd be with Nashville right now.
So let me ask you guys this, and I think we've kind of touched on it throughout the season, but I'll just lay it out there now that we're winding down here. Would you, looking back at this season, rather have seen a Blues team who beat up on all the bottom feeders and then maybe won one or two of the games against the Rangers or Boston, but not as many as they did because they won a lot, right? Or would you rather have the opposite of that, which is what we saw, where you can beat? What tells you more about the team? What team would you turn on the TV and watch on a more regular basis? The team that takes care of business and then, hey, you win a couple against the big guys, or what we saw?
I mean, me personally, I would much rather see the team that took care of the business and lost to the better teams. Because when you beat the better teams and you lose to those bottom dwellers, you're thinking, who is this team?
Yeah.
Whereas if I go out there every single game and go 3-0 against the Sharks, 3-0 against the Ducks, defeat the Blackhawks every single time, take down the Blue Jackets, take down the Coyotes, I'm thinking, all right, You're better than all of the... You're not a rebuilding team. That's what a rebuilding team looks like. You are a team that's trying to catch these teams. And if you win the occasional game against the top opponent, you're thinking, man, they just got more talent right now. And that's fine. You'll get there. But instead, I've seen them destroy Edmonton. I've seen them beat Colorado, beat Dallas, beat Vancouver, beat Vegas, and thinking this team's a playoff team. And then you go against the Sharks and you just say, nope, no, we don't have it tonight. And I was listening, Barrett Jackman, who was out at that event on Friday, Puck Cancer, was on with our Fastlane guys, and they asked about the Blues, and Jackman just bluntly said they just don't have effort consistently. He said it's all about effort. And he's like, if you come to the rink ready to play, you have an upper hand against those teams, but if you lose it for a period, then you're not going to have it in the NHL.
Well, and I mean, I think those... It tells you everything that you need to know about this team. You know what I mean? And I would much rather have the one that beats the bottom feeders and occasionally gets that big dub, because then you can kind of track a little bit better, like where you kind of are. As the season goes on, are you getting better against those good teams that maybe were housing you at the beginning of the season? You could see that growth. Here, to me, it still feels real messy. Like, it feels incredibly messy, but I absolutely go with Alex on that.
It feels like there's just question marks everywhere still. Whereas if you beat those bottom dwellers, I don't know if you're asking about question marks of certain players. I think you're saying, okay, well, you just need to add a couple of pieces, or these pieces just need to grow into the roles. But instead, because of the Sharks games, because of the Ducks games, because of the Blue Jackets games, you're sitting there going, is this the right team?
Guys, here's how have there been so many games where the team collectively essentially just kind of shrugged. And there were just so many games this year where they had the ability to take the wheel, to really grab control of the wild card race, of anything, and they just don't do it. It's so befuddling to me. And that's one of the reasons why I'm happy for the page to get turned a bit, because I don't understand.
Well, to answer that question, I mean, the Detroit Red Wings game that you laid the egg in Detroit, that was an opportunity that you had to pounce on the opponent, and that led to a losing skid. The Columbus Blue Jackets game going into the All-Star break, that had the potential of being a 5-game win streak, which would have resulted in a 7-game win streak coming out of the All-Star break. And then the Nashville Predators game that you played against them at home, that had the opportunity to, I think, tie them in points, if I'm not mistaken, or be within 1 point. And then the Vegas Golden Knights game that you lost, where you went 11 forwards and 7 defensemen. Like, those 4 games right there, you're thinking, these were the moments where it goes back to the Doug Armstrong quote, right, of stab the brain, a knife into the brain of the opponent and kill him off. Those were the moments that it felt like that was their chance to do it, and they didn't do it.
And I think that's where the disconnect comes, and that's why a comment from Barrett Jackman comes from the situation, is because, you know, he's been around since
absolutely
early 2000s when he was drafted. We've all been watching for, you know, beyond that. And what St. Louis fans want from the team, and we've seen over the years, is even when they didn't have a chance, or even when the roster was trimmed down a little bit, or undermanned, or guys were banged up, you always got that effort. Even if it was a game in November or December where your backs weren't up against the wall, you got that type of effort, and I think that's what fans here have come to appreciate. So now you have a situation where everything's on the line. You could get 3 points out of a playoff spot, and you can't beat a basement team. It's just, so I agree with you guys. You know, I knew the answer to my own question is you want to have a team that can handle those opponents, because it says a lot about your backbone of who you are.
Yes.
Yeah. Look, hey, you can go show us that you can beat the Rangers on an odd night, or Boston, or whomever, but this shows you about the backbone. And I understand that there's going to be some turnover with the roster, and maybe this team will have a stronger backbone next year with whoever comes back on this roster. But, you know, this trend, this storyline with the San Jose's, Columbus's, Chicago's, am I forgetting somebody? Like, this will continue. Like, you're going to go into next year, and what are people going to be talking about that first night you play San Jose, Chicago? Yeah. What are the players going to be asked about? What are they going to have to answer? What are they going to go out onto the ice with in their mind? Oh, we can't, you know, struggle with these teams. It really was. You put together a list of 5 headlines this year. It's on that list.
I think it's important, too, when we say lack of effort. Like, that San Jose Sharks game, the Blues outplayed San Jose in the first period. Even the previous time that they played against the San Jose Sharks, when they lost 4-0, what they have, like 20 shots on goal in the first period against Mackenzie Blackwood? The Blues have it seems an issue this season that when their first period, and Bannister even said this, when their game and their strategy doesn't work in the first period where they're putting a lot of point or shots on goal, but they're not getting anything through the goaltender, they veer into a different direction by the second period that says, okay, well, that's not working. Let's try something else. Mm-hmm. And that's where I think the effort goes away, as to where you have it in the first period, but when it doesn't work, it's like, okay, well, we're going to try something else because that's not working. Whereas when you go back to those top dogs that you've beaten in the NHL, when it hasn't worked in one period, they go back out there in the next period and do the same thing. And it's like, okay, well, that carries over because you have no room for error against those teams, to where it feels like they look at the Sharks, they look at the Blue Jackets, they look at the Blackhawks, and you're thinking, all right, well, we can make mistakes. Let's be a little bit more aggressive here and make mistakes. And the problem is those mistakes lead to goals. And I was listening to Friedman and Merrick, the 32 Thoughts podcast, on yesterday, and they were talking about the Sharks, and Friedman was like, if there's one team that is going to be angry at what the Sharks have done to them this season, it's going to be the Blues, because they were swept. And Friedman went on to say, because of those games against the Sharks, that led Friedman to believe that Doug Armstrong wants to do massive surgery to this roster. And Friedman said, because of those three losses to the San Jose Sharks, that's what led him to believe Doug's going to want to accomplish that with the Blues this offseason.
This is an oh-duh statement, I understand, but this offseason is, I mean, to me, if this offseason doesn't go the way that you think, then maybe you are really starting to think about a true rebuild.
Yeah.
Maybe. I don't know. It's such a bummer when we are talking about these games that they could have and should have won and didn't win, pretty much because it seems like the team is missing some mental toughness or something along those ways. That's really friggin' tough to swallow, man.
Yeah, well, and I mean, just sorry to take this over right now, but I talked with Doug Waite Saturday or Sunday for pregame because he was at that Puck Cancer event. I didn't realize Doug Waite's a hockey advisor with the San Jose Sharks now. And so we were talking about the event, and then we got into a little hockey talk, and I asked him about the retool versus the rebuild. Just thinking, okay, you know, he played with the Islanders at the end of his career. He saw what that looked like. He saw the Blues in the front end. And then I find out he was with the Sharks. And Waite said, like, the difference between a retool and a rebuild is night and day. He's like, when you talk about a rebuild, you talk about what San Jose is doing right now, to where you don't have any veterans that have the experience of winning. He's like, we got a couple of guys, but they're on the back end of their career. He said, our entire roster is filled with guys that need to learn what winning hockey feels like. He said, and we've got a ton of draft picks that we're excited for. We've got a ton of young players right now, but we know they all need that experience into what winning feels like. That's what a rebuild looks like. And he said the rebuild happens when a team is good for a very long time, and then you have to move in a different direction. He said the Blues are not in a rebuild because they have guys that know how to win. They have guys that know what it takes to get to that next level. And when you implement the Snuggeruds and the Dvorskis and the Lindsteins and the Stenbergs, those guys will step in with the Thomases and the Parekos and the Binningtons and the guys that know what it takes to win. It's just a matter, he had talked about, of meshing that culture together in the locker room. And he said sometimes that takes a lot of work, but he's like, there is a vast difference between a retool and a rebuild. I don't know. I don't believe this team's in a rebuild or will be in a rebuild, but I do agree with Donnie. They will have to do, as Friedman said, some massive surgery on this roster.
Yeah, and I don't think they're in a rebuild yet either, but I would say this, piggybacking off of what Doug kind of said there, Doug Waite, that do they have the players who know what it takes to win? Because I don't know that they
do. Follow up.
You know, he says they have the players that know what it takes, and I understand where he's coming from because you have a lot of names on this team who have had success in the league before. But as a collection, this group, this roster, if you combine, do they have the talent with the question, do they know what it takes? I think we've seen 2 years of a situation that gives us evidence that they don't.
And that's why I think Elliot Friedman had said on his podcast that, again, this is Friedman's reporting, not mine, that Doug would like to do some massive surgery to this roster. You have the players. I mean, you look at Thomas, you look at Neighbors, you look at Toropchenko, you look at Parayko, you look at both goaltenders. I think those six guys that I just named now, and I'm sure you could throw a couple more in there, but those six guys that I just mentioned, we've seen it this season. Like, you've seen the the compete doesn't disappear from their game like a Jake Nabers or a Robert Thomas. Even when Thomas is in a 9-game goalless drought, he's still picking up 5 points. You've seen the fight back from Colton Parayko dropping the gloves against Klim Kostin. You've seen both goaltenders carry you this season. I think those guys have shown the ability to win and show what it takes to win and play that style. I think that's where the massive surgery comes in of the players around that and thinking like, okay, do, and that's why I feel like Bannister's doing what he's doing right now of putting these guys in bigger positions. Can you fit the void right now that we're trying to figure out where you fit into this roster?
I mean, I feel as though that my earlier comment about a rebuild is a bit emotional right now.
No.
You know what I mean?
No.
Like, I think that's kind of where that sits, but if you don't have, you know, if you're not able to kind of do a pretty significant playing with this roster.
I think what it does is it extends your retool era. Instead of like going into a rebuild, if you don't fix it, I think it just extends the time frame.
Yeah, I see what you're saying.
Like, because when Doug said what last year was going to be, he hoped it was 3 years with the LA Kings, like what the LA Kings did. This was year one. Year three would be, you know, next year two, then the year after year three. If you're not able to fix the culture side of it that we're talking about, wouldn't it just extend it to a longer window?
Yeah, I think it extends it. But to me, it all comes down to this. Like, you talk about what Elliot said, you know, make major surgery this offseason, and we've discussed this, it all depends on what's out there and what another team is willing to do. Because if you're Doug Armstrong, let's just assume, you know, obviously he's doing all of his homework. Let's say he's identified, okay, you can win with this guy, this guy, this guy. You can't win with this guy, this guy, this guy. Okay, so I'm going to try to move those guys that we talked about you can't win with. This guy has a no trade. This guy has a no trade. Okay, is there any interest in these two guys? And what's it going to take to move them? You know, we could show up here to do our first podcast of the next season in September, October, and there's 5 new guys on the team. And the only reason that can be the case is if Doug was able to find partners and
suitors,
and how much did he have to up the ante? Was somebody willing to take a Torrey Krug straight up for so-and-so? Did Doug have to add a first round pick to that? Did he have to buy somebody out? And then now the Blues are carrying $2.5 million per year for the next 6 years, you know, on their salary cap. So, you know, I think that we all know what the situation is and what it could be. Whether we're going to be talking about something different in 4 or 5 months is going to be based on who's willing to play ball with Doug. Because he's going to do it. It's just who's going to be willing and what's the price going to be.
Yeah, and we saw this past year, the deal was in place. The player invoked his no-trade clause, which he had every right to do. But he already showed what he was trying to accomplish. Can he pull it off another offseason?
All right, I'm going to put you both on the spot.
Ruh-roh.
Right now. Boom, 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 boom.
All right, Fandango.
On the spot.
No, it's Mueller. Come on, man.
Either one, applicable. Call me Donnie. Just don't call me an ass. That's fine.
Well,
in this offseason, let me rephrase. When the season starts next year, 24-25 St. Louis Blues, is Jordan Kyrou on that team?
Oh, man, putting you on the spot with this one.
Because virtually almost any person that I talk to that has a decent amount of hockey knowledge, for the most part, it is, this is not a great situation, but holy smokes, he has so much talent. Trading him should be the absolute last resort.
For me, if you're putting me on the spot with it, my answer would be no.
Because he's not on the roster.
He's not on the roster. Because if you're going to pull massive surgery, as Elliot Friedman referenced, I think he's one of the few pieces that would warrant a return that could help the team right away.
Mm-hmm.
All of the other pieces that you're talking about, the Buches, any of the big contracts on the defensive side, I think there's two guys. Those guys bring you back picks and prospects. I think there's two guys on this roster that would bring you something in return that helps the team right now, and it's Binnington and it's Kyrou. And I am an advocate for not trading Jordan Binnington, but I know there are people out there that say if you trade him, you can get a hell of a haul and you put yourself in the right spot. I think Kyrou's the other guy that if you were to look at this and say, can we win with this player? If we trade him, what can we get in return? I think that's one of the few trades that can bring you something back that makes your team effective next year. Mm-hmm. I think it's like a, it's a, I'm trying to think of the right phrase with it. It's like a benefit without a loss, if that makes sense. Profit without a loss. Like, you trade them away. Yes, you're losing a potential 45, 50 goal scorer, but are you getting somebody who also is a 45, potential 50 goal scorer on another team that needs a change of scenery?
So I agree with, you know, probably everything Alex said there. I'm going to say that he is on the roster, though, for this reason. I think those types of trades are so hard to pull off that you can go into the offseason saying, hey, we definitely want to investigate this and we want to try to make it happen, but then pulling it off is very difficult. But even more so, I think that, you know, he did make some strides, and I want to emphasize some strides in the defensive end this year. You know, could that get better next year? Maybe, maybe not. It was a down year for him. And he's close to 30 goals and right up there with Jake Neighbors, right? And, you know, I understand we're all going to talk about Jordan Kyrou's shortcomings, and I'll continue here in a second. But remember when he was snake-bitten early in the season and hit about four posts and then missed on, like, six breakaways? Yeah. Like, if he hits three or four or five of those, we're talking, like, 34 goals. So I know I'm kind of supporting the case of he's still got some upside and they could still keep him and this still could be a successful situation with Jordan Kyrou. I don't know that it's going to go that way. I'm just kind of painting the picture that maybe this could be what the Blues are thinking. But the biggest thing is, you know, trading a guy with 7 years left on his contract, and there just has to be a perfect fit.
Right.
Like you can look at the other 31 teams and identify, let's say, four situations that might work and three of the teams don't want to do it. And you've got to find that perfect, perfect fit to get the compensation you want back in him and then understand that he can go score 45 goals for the next 5 years. So the other thing is that no trade that he has, and for fans who just aren't familiar with contract situations, when he signed his deal, it came with a no trade, but you cannot have it. It does not kick in until you turn 27 or you got 7 years in the league. So it does not kick in until he's 27. And thus, it does not kick in until the start of the summer going into the 25-26 season.
So next offseason.
So next offseason, not this offseason. So there isn't a push to the Blues to make sure he gets traded this coming offseason before the no trade kicks in, because it doesn't happen until the following offseason. So I agree with what Alex said, and I think there is a possibility that it definitely could happen. I'm just going to, for this case, this conversation, say that he's still on the roster based on what I said.
I think it makes sense too.
I just feel like it's a nightmare when that dude goes somewhere else, finally matures, settles into his brain, and scores 40 friggin' goals.
Yeah.
I mean, you can just see the immaturity in the dude. But I mean, even in an interview setting, like, he's just young. He's still very, very young. And it, I don't know.
It's the Tage Thompson thing, though, right? Like, Tage Thompson stings more if you don't get back O'Reilly.
That's right. Boy, I've heard some bad stories about Tage Thompson. As far as not being a particularly very nice dude in the locker room. Maybe when he first came into the league, had a bit of an ego.
Probably, which I guess, you get plenty of those guys, and I think that's part of the reason why you move on from certain players, to where it's just, I think I was listening to a podcast that Berglund was on. Forgot which one it was, but Berglund had talked about that, to where, like, he was a kid that Berglund referenced, felt like he deserved more than what he had at that time.
Right.
So, like, and that's Berglund, who played with him in St. Louis and then was a part of the trade that went to Buffalo. And, like, Berglund said, I'm done with this. I'm not playing for Buffalo anymore.
Right.
So, I mean, look, even if he's got that attitude, like, you've got a 50-goal scorer for the Buffalo Sabres. And, I mean, I'm sure that stings for some Blues fans. But on the other side of it, it can't sting too much.
If the Pittsburgh Penguins make the playoffs, should Sidney Crosby be the MVP of the league?
Absolutely.
Do you think
Absolutely.
It would? Do you think? I mean,
I
do you
think?
Think
it, will. It, well, you know, not after what Matthews. I mean, Matthews is chasing 60 goals this season, and then McDavid, the point total he's putting up, like, that's just. I mean, look at how they give the Norris Trophy. Norris Trophy doesn't go to the best defenseman;
right.
It goes to the best defenseman with the most points. Like, to me, Roman Josi should be the Norris Trophy this year. I don't think he gets it. I think Cale Makar or Quinn Hughes get it. If Pittsburgh makes the playoffs, Sidney Crosby should be the freaking MVP. Look at that roster that they played with. They traded away the best player, second best player on that team in Jake Guentzel. While Carolina goes on a tear, Crosby's like, cool, I'll put you on my back and win it again at 36 years old.
That was the analogy. It was just him with all of the Pittsburgh Penguins on his back as they march towards the playoffs.
As I judge MVPs of the league, I say, pluck them off the roster and how good's the team? How good's Toronto without Austin Matthews? Like, that's 60 goals that you're losing, but Marner, Tavares, Nylander, how good is Edmonton when you take Connor McDavid away from it? I mean, that's tough, but right, Leon Draisaitl, Evander Kane, they've got some good defensemen. How good is Pittsburgh without Crosby?
Boy, you would have to think that would hit the turlet pretty quick.
I mean, that's why the Blues, it doesn't seem like they're making the playoffs, but if the Blues would have made the playoffs, man, I would have been shouting from the mountaintops Binnington as the Vezina Trophy winner.
Yeah.
Or at least the top three, because like that dude taking you to the playoffs should absolutely be acknowledged for that. Now, if you miss it, I don't think it will, but I still think he's been one of the top three, top five goaltenders in the NHL this season.
Man, and that Crosby line has just been so fantastic to watch, because 2 months ago, man, people were burying the Penguins, or even six weeks ago, burying the Penguins. And so to see a great player like that, never mind at 36 years old, do this sort of thing is
freaking wild.
Is just incredibly freaking badass.
Yeah.
Gentlemen, are we missing anything?
I don't know, man. I feel like we've touched on a lot here. Garth Brooks. JR.
No, it's just weird that it's coming to an end. Like you talked about it earlier in the show. That what's that?
No. You know what?
Light bulb.
Real quick though, before we wrap up, and I'm sorry to interrupt. I've been negative Nancy here for the last couple of weeks, and I've really tried from time to time to throw in the caveat of, hey, there is a lot of great young talent on the way. I am not an unhappy St. Louis Blues fan per se. I feel as though the glass is half full. I do,
but
after watching the last few weeks, I'm just a little, lack of a better term, I'm a little pissy with this particular roster. I want to see some turnover here, and I want to see guys that really want to be here. And win, lose, I just want to see it. But seeing Jake Neighbors and all of these things, we have reasons to be optimistic. This does not need to be a negative situation.
Well, in that sense, I mean, how about Bolduc in that last game playing on the top line with Thomas? I mean, like, you saw what the Blues are excited about with him with that shot that he had. It's just a matter of fine-tuning some things. Scott Perunovic, I mean, like, we talked a lot about how it's been in and out of the lineup. He played two games where he played north of 20 minutes. Finished him as a +3 with 2 assists. Like, you got guys that at least you're starting to see who they are. That's why it sucks that we're in this position as Blues fans, because there's 4 games left and you're like, wow, the season's pretty much done for. It's another season where you're missing the playoffs. But at least you've got 4 games to see what these guys truly are made of, because you're putting them in top pair, top line situations, and you see how it looks the rest of the way.
And the Blues and Doug Armstrong, they really have to be careful in this situation, because, hey, whenever people bring up the names Jake Walman and Vince Dunn to me, I can give you 6 reasons why the Blues were perfectly fine in moving on from them.
Agreed.
Because they had been given opportunity. They had played top line minutes. They tried to trade Vince Dunn, couldn't get any more than a 3rd-round pick. And so people went criticize the Blues for not keeping Vince Dunn. There were 29, 30 other teams in a league that weren't going to give up more than a 3rd-round pick for him. So anyway, you could go on and on and on. But I'll say this. You know, you might say, okay, well, you know, trade Scott Perunovic or trade this guy. You got to be careful, because once these guys are given more ice time in a regular role, like Scott Perunovic was in and out of the lineup, and I know why. He was, you know, taking some lumps, but you just have to be careful. So not only does Doug Armstrong have some big questions, big priorities, big things that he needs to tackle with some of these veteran guys and whether it's time to move on from him, but be careful with some of these young guys who might not look like they have it but probably just need a longer runway.
It's amazing how it works. It's just the player evolution, the maturity, the whole thing. Sports is freaking great.
Speaking of that, Donnie, I actually just got an alert from the Buffalo Bills.
Dude, come on, man.
It looks like Josh Allen.
Listen, if that's the case, I'm leaving work today. Somebody call Tommy, get in the mid, because I need to go to a bar and drink in the middle of the day, and I'm not even a day drinker.
Donnie's going to a state of mourning when that happens.
Dude, it very much would be, man.
Alex, what would be the perfect team to tell Donnie that Allen got traded to?
Oh, man.
Like, it's not Dolphins. He wouldn't buy that.
It's got to be.
But honestly, if you traded that dude anywhere, I might weep.
I know, but I want to trade him to a team that makes you upset.
Well,
like the LA Rams.
That would be rough.
Like because Matthew Stafford for Josh Allen.
Well, you know what's crazy is I've got to root for a Ram player this year
because
Tre'Davious White just signed a 1-year deal, man, and I love that friggin' guy.
I forgot about that.
But we did make it through this podcast without any sort of upsetting news.
That is true.
Which is nice.
Gentlemen,
thank you very much. We appreciate you guys listening. As always, for Jeremy Rutherford of The Athletic, Alex Ferrario from 101 ESPN, my name is Donnie Fandango. Shout out to our dude, Jeff Burton, who we miss so much. It's the Last Minute Blues Podcast. As always, thanks for listening, and let's go Blue.
The Last Minute Blues Podcast. Hear more at 1057thepoint.com.